You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you break free from body shame, binging, and diets that don't work. So let me ask you something. Do you have food rules like you can't eat bread and lose weight, or you want to start eating better, but you just don't know how to do that when you also can't stop binging? What do you do? Well, good news. I am so excited. My guest today is Marissa Kai-Millick. She is a registered dietitian, nutritionist, struggle with their relationship with food and body image, and she specializes in binge eating. She helps people break free from restrictive eating patterns and reclaim trust with their bodies. Oh, an amazing thing to do, and move forward in a more compassionate approach to health and well-being. And when she isn't working with clients, she enjoys spreading the anti-diet message on Instagram and through her podcast, Behind the Binge. Welcome, Marissa.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I am so glad you're here. We're already starting to get questions, but first, can you tell us a little bit about your story and how you came to do the work that you do?
Absolutely. Well, I became a registered dietitian because of my own struggles with my relationship with food in my body for many years. Starting in early high school, up and through my early 20s, I was in this familiar diet war that many people get swept into, where it was either being all quote unquote good dieting, following strict rules, or on the other side of the pendulum, absolutely losing control, binge eating, and feeling like there was something wrong with me and my appetite. And so being stuck in that cycle for so long, first of all, is exhausting. But second of all, over time, it becomes fewer and farther between that you actually have quote unquote good spurts. And next thing I knew, it was like binging every day. And unfortunately, like developing more into an eating disorder of bulimia. And I hit a moment where I knew that I didn't want to live this way. Like passion stages were completely taken over by my obsessions with food. It was all I thought about. And it wasn't the life that was filled with my true purpose and values that I wanted. And so I started to look for help. I struggled to find that help because of a lot of the stigmas out there about eating disorders. But through online resources, even through knowing you and knowing about your old—I don't think it's still going on—but your free eating disorder support group you used to have when I was living in LA, I was able to build up that motivation to change and really go full-fledged into a self-recovery journey. And by doing that, I knew nobody else should have to go through this alone. Nobody should have to struggle for this long. And I wanted to make a change. And that's when I completely changed my career path and decided to become a dietitian so that I could do what I so greatly needed in that time. And yeah, now here I am and I get to do it. And it's very rewarding and it fills me with so much joy to be here spreading the message, especially with someone who was at the beginning of my journey with me.
You know, a lot of people came through my doors when I had that group. And I actually remember you. I remember because you used to walk to my office. I remember you telling me that what you wanted to do. And it is such a joy for me to see how you have turned your struggle into helping so many other people. And I'm so proud of you and so happy for you.
Thank
and it's
you.
Just wonderful to see.
Thank
we're getting
you so
a lot
much.
Of, well, we're getting some questions there, but before we get to the questions from the people on Instagram, I do want to ask you just some things that I think people need to know, like why diets don't work from your perspective.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's helpful to define what I'll be speaking on when I say diet. So frequently when we say diets don't work, I think there becomes this idea that, oh, yeah, of course, fad diets don't work, right? You know, doing things that are overly restrictive. But truly, in a sense, dieting is any intentional, structured form of manipulation of your food in order to pursue changing your body in some way. And so we can define anything, whether it's basic calorie restricting or Weight Watchers, as a diet all in the same. And the reason why diets don't work is because everybody is different and everybody has different needs. And our body is going to do what it needs to do in order to get those needs met. So if the diet doesn't give you the energy you need to sustain your life-giving, you know, body processes, or doesn't give you the energy for emotional regulation, doesn't give you the energy to show up as your best in your career, your passions, your relationships, then it is going to go into overdrive to find that energy and reserve that energy for the most important things. So when that happens is when we get that ravenous, insatiable hunger for food, and it can backfire with the binge eating. And so food and eating to give us what we need isn't just about fuel alone. It also meets a need in so many other ways. And so even if we think we are quote unquote eating enough or getting the right amount of the certain macros, it doesn't always align with what internally our body is truly desiring. And so to kind of put that in really simple terms, diets don't work because it's about relying on external rules that are created for one size fits all approach to health versus what your body is actually telling you with the amazing innate cues you have to give your body what it needs already.
And then dieting, you know, to your point, separates you from your inner cues, which is where intuitive eating comes in. You said a couple of things. One that I want to address. One, it's not about fuel. One of the things that I hear the most is, oh, I should just be fueling my body. And actually, food is one of the pleasures of life, right? We're supposed to enjoy it. And if we're just eating rabbit food, eventually we're going to binge on something yummy. That's why my one food rule is it has to be yummy.
Yes. And fueling, just to go off of your point there, is a really vague word. What does that mean? And we often forget that food does give us nutritional fuel. We don't have to ignore that, but it also is social. It also is tradition, culture, based on it, relationships, environment, so many different things that have effects on our health, right? We've noticed this even just with the quarantine period, how many people had a decline in their health because of that isolation. Social relationships impact our health, and food is part of that. And so it may be giving you a health benefit and fueling your body in a different way than just about that nutritional value. And so that's where we can shift this mindset away from health and fueling our body with food being a very black and white, you know, just about the nutritional value, to more of a place of the variety and dynamic ways that food adds benefits to our life and well-being.
Absolutely. So intuitive eating, listening to our bodies. A lot of people will like, okay, I'm listening to my body, but it's either not saying anything or it's telling me to eat cake. What do you do when someone says, well, just listen to your body, and you don't know what that even means?
Yeah, I think that it is really common to get this fear of listening to our body when we haven't been listening to our body for so long. We've been stuck relying on diet rules for years, if not decades. Of course, you're not just going to be able to listen to your body tomorrow because you haven't been. So my first thing that I usually say to people is it's not something that we are able to just tune into right away if we've been disconnected for some time. So always give it the time and the patience and curiosity to learn what it is your body is saying to you. But second, I like to clarify what intuitive eating really means, because yes, while it is about listening to our body, we often forget that our mind is part of our body. Our brain is part of our body, and it is a very smart organ that really is working hard to keep us safe. And so intuitive eating, as described by one of the authors of the original book, Elise Reich, she puts it as intuitive eating is the dynamic interplay of instinct, emotion, and thought. And so instinctually, yes, you're going to be listening to more of those hunger cues, maybe fullness cues, satisfaction cues, even taste preference, but our emotions and thoughts have a role here, and we may make decisions on how to respond to those instincts using our thought, more of that logic to pair with that instinct. So when you are learning to become an intuitive eater, we want to build that inner attunement first before we then have the trust and ability to use our logic to make a decision, so we're not falling into the slippery slopes of dieting again. So that is why you may see such a big emphasis out there in social media, or even in the first few chapters of intuitive eating, on our hunger, fullness signals and listening to our body, because that's more of a foundation and the mindset work in order to reject the diet rules, get connected back to your body, regulate those body signals. And then, there's a lot of ways it could be interpreted, but at the core, it is acknowledging the fact that we are all very dynamic human beings, and there is no one right or wrong way to honor your body and your body's needs. And so intuitive eating really is handing over the trust back to the individual to be the expert of their own body. So that's kind of an overview, but of course it's a little more complicated than that if you're coming from maybe a history of dieting or disordered eating.
Absolutely. And I also want to invite anyone who would like to join us today. The number is 323-203-0815. Again, the call-in number, 323-203-0815. Please feel free to join the conversation. We would love to hear from you. So how does one go about starting to trust what your body is telling you when you're simultaneously in a toxic relationship with food?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is understanding why we're in a toxic relationship with food in the first place. Because honestly, if our body is responding with a binge, that's telling us something. That is our body speaking to us in a way. But frequently, the shame, the guilt, the judgment gets in the way of our own curiosity and deepening our understanding of why is this happening. And then we might be trying to fight it with just quote unquote motivation and willpower, as if that is what it takes to stop binge eating. When really, if we turn in and we think, where did this come from? Why did this start? You often find that the binge eating was actually a really smart way our body was working hard to get our needs met. Logically, we may know that it's not meeting our needs in a lot of other ways emotionally, or what really makes us feel our best. But physically, if your body is needing that energy or that comfort in order to survive what is a perceived danger, such as a famine of dieting, then that is the best, easiest, quickest way to keep us safe, getting it in, getting the comfort or energy, and being able to sustain what we need to survive, but not necessarily thrive. And so if that's the case for someone, we want to say, where did this begin? Okay, if it began with dieting, why were we dieting? What is it that is feeling really off limits? What are the patterns I already noticed with these binges? Why is it every time I go for donuts, I eat a whole box? Well, do I allow myself to have a donut at any time? Does it feel that way with foods I do allow myself to have at any time? And then we may notice, oh, there's a pattern here. The more I'm restricting something, the more I'm desiring it and binging on it. And there's a reason for that, which is the lack of security with that food. Our body wants to stock up to feel safe around for that future restriction of. And so first step there would really be dissecting and rejecting those mentalities that keep us stuck in those restrictive cycles. So removing the food rules, starting to normalize all foods again so they lose that off-limit novelty, and starting to see that, you know, if you can eat something every day, any day at any time, as much as you want, you often are able to make the choice. And you may not even want it as much as you thought you did, which is always a really incredible revelation for a client to notice, like, I don't even like it as much as I thought I did. It was just that it felt off limits that made it more desirable. So it's really kind of that first step is we got to remove the barrier of what's fueling the disordered cycles. And that's usually why I say, let's see what's behind the binge to understand why and then work from the ground up.
One of the things I say a lot is, you know, be curious, not critical, because when you're curious, then you can start to look at, well, why did I eat this? Not, oh my God, I ate that. I'm horrible. Mm-hmm. Now I feel bad about myself and now I'm going to eat for comfort, right? Just to be like, well, what was going on in me? And we can learn so much when we are curious. So I love that you have the point about curiosity.
And yeah, I love that word, curiosity. It's just, it's such a way to get really introspective and turn in instead of trying to rely on, again, all of those things outside of yourself that somebody's going to say one thing, your mom's going to say another thing, your aunt's going to say another thing. It's like, well, what about you? Because you know yourself better than anyone else, believe it or not, because nobody else is living in your shoes.
Exactly. And the anticipation or experience of deprivation always makes you want the thing more. And of course, as you said, it kind of tastes better when you think you can't have it. I'm sure that you've had the experience of many people going, I remembered Snickers as being so much better than they actually are. Or I, like that cake that I wouldn't let myself have that I binged on is actually not that good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's a clever study out there of kids who were given unlimited access to M&Ms, but they were told not to eat the red ones. And all M&Ms are the same. They're just different colors. But of course, when they said, just don't eat the red ones, that's the one that they gave the most attention to and ate the most of. But if we compare that to our own relationship with food, when we started to put the emphasis on restricting one type of food, let's say carbs, for example, can we see a pattern of that increasing our desire for that, increasing the craving for that, and increasing the lack of control we had around that food? You know, we can normally make that comparison and correlation there.
Yeah. There was also another study, and it had been posted on the eating disorder, intuitive eating website a long time ago. And it was about researchers who said, okay, we're going to prove the existence of food addiction. And what they did was they told people to eat their forbidden foods. And their theory was, oh, people are not going to be able to stop eating their forbidden foods, thus proving food addiction is a real thing. Mm-hmm. And what happened? The opposite happened when they were given permission to and encouraged to eat their forbidden foods. They ate less of them.
So. Yeah. And that's the big difference. And I think it's really great that you mentioned the food addiction thing, because there's a lot of misconceptions out there about that. While, yes, absolutely, we can feel addicted to food. If we think about the actual, you know, physiology of what happens to our body when we have an addiction to something, usually the more we use it or consume it, the more we need it, we build a higher tolerance, whereas the opposite happens with food. The more we eat it, when we fully allow ourselves to get what we need, then the less we feel a desire for it, the less pulled we are for it. And everybody can probably find a time in their life where they felt really full, even if it was childhood. They ate as much as they needed or wanted in a setting, whether it was because they had permission because it was a quote unquote cheat day, or if it was just permission prior to dieting, where they ate enough and they just didn't think about food anymore. And so that wouldn't switch like that, that quickly if it was food that was the addictive substance. So before, jumping to this, to a conclusion that the food is the problem, why don't we see where we may be fueling these feelings of addiction with the subsequent restriction?
Right. It's like, if we're going to use the word addiction, which I do not like to use, even though I co-edited a book about addiction, I like to say it's not a food addiction. If we're going to use the word addiction, it's more like an eating addiction. It's like eating to resolve something or because you didn't get enough of it for all the many reasons. Yeah. It's not the substance of food.
Right. Or even it's like the addictive like behaviors or like addiction like feelings or tendencies. Absolutely. So valid. And I've been there. It's like our mind takes over, feels like we're blacking out and we're being driven by a motor when we're in that binge mode. But when we think of it as, like you said, the food is the addictive substance, it can sometimes release some of our ability to see other factors that might be fueling it. Like it prevents us from being able to see the bigger picture there because it feels like the food is to blame versus, you know, what behavior changes or mindset changes we could make to allow that food and be able to eat it and move on.
Yep, food is the solution to the problem. It's not the problem, but it's not a solution that's good. So, yeah.
It's one of those things. I make a post about it frequently where I'm like, surprisingly, to resolve binge eating, you need to actually eat more. And that can be really troubling to understand just at first glance because you're like, I'm trying to eat less. That's why I don't want to binge. But if our body is trying to protect us from a restriction, frequently we're trying to increase our frequency and amount of eating in order to resolve that need to binge.
Exactly. It's counterintuitive, but it's kind of like the only way to get rid of feelings is to actually feel them. The only way to get rid of binging is to actually eat the thing that you're afraid to eat, which you're going to end up restricting and then binging anyway. So just eat it and get and trust yourself. Okay, so how do you trust yourself when you have been told your whole life, or have you've told yourself, I can't eat X. Let's just say ice cream. I can't have ice cream in the house. I can't eat ice cream. I'll eat the whole gallon. Ice cream is like my personal crack. How do you then trust yourself to start eating ice cream without binging on it?
I like to compare it to relationships. Right. If you have a friend who is always late or always flaking on plans, and you think, I can't trust them to be anywhere on time. And so I'm going to always work my plans around this idea that they can't be trusted. Like we're not giving them the opportunity to build back that trust. But what if we give them the opportunity to build back that trust? What would it take to trust them again? Probably take time, consistency of them showing up on time. Reliability, communication, all sorts of different factors. So can we apply that with us building back trust with our relationship with our body and with those signals? Because, yeah, you don't trust your body. I wouldn't trust my body either if every time I tried to listen to it, I binged. I mean, that's the experience that I did have myself. Truth is, your body's not even trusting you back, which is why you may feel like your hunger goes from 0 to 100. It's like you don't even notice you're hungry and then you're ravenous. It's because it doesn't trust that even those subtle signs of hunger would be honored. So why waste the energy on, you know, the grumbling tummy at 2 p.m. when, you know, we know we'll just get all of our needs met at 7 p.m. when we feel insatiable. And so that's our body's way of reserving its energy and protecting you. And our actual hunger fullness hormones do change and shift in these periods of restriction to increase our hunger and decrease our fullness so that we don't really feel the fullness. And so in order to build back the trust to regulate all those processes, to show our body that we will meet its needs and we have to give it that time, consistency of eating patterns, reliable access to food, communication with that introspection, and nurturing your body back to a place of just care and normalcy instead of the rigidity and the rules. So if you feel like you can't trust yourself, you probably can't, but you can build back that body trust the same way you could build back trust with a friend.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. I love that. Yeah.
It's the same factors, right? When we break trust, it's like, it doesn't mean it's too far gone. We can build back that trust. We just have to apply it to our own relationship with ourselves.
And I love that you say we can build back the trust, because we originally have the trust mm-hmm. with our bodies. We're not born with this sense that these are bad foods and these are good foods, and I'm bad if I eat that and I'm good if we eat that. So we just have to eliminate those diet rules or these ideas that so many of us take as reality, and relearn to trust ourselves as we did initially before we were socialized into mistrusting our bodies and knowing what's right for us.
Exactly. We're all born naturally intuitive eaters, right? When you're a baby, you cry when you need food. You turn away from the bottle when you don't anymore. You get fussy when you don't feel so great. All these things, like our body sending us signals. Then as our brain develops and our ability to just like learn develops, that part of our brain, more of the logic can come into play there. And we can pair that instinctual, instinctual body cues with more of our understanding and logic to make decisions. But all of that is naturally developed. And then we get pulled out of that when we start thinking that somehow it has betrayed us, it's wrong in some way, or that there's a better way to honor our body than what we've just are always known. And so, yeah, getting pulled out of trust with ourselves is really the starting point, but we can come back to it because it's always been part of us.
Yeah. And as you were talking about earlier, it's that external, it's something external that's telling us what we should eat instead of us trusting what we know our bodies need or want sometimes, because it's not just about need. That's one of the food mm-hmm. rules I think that is important to challenge, is if you should only eat things that your body needs and you should only eat clean protein and vegetables. I'm mocking it even as I'm saying it, as opposed to just a wide variety of different kinds of foods. And then there's no deprivation. And then if you know you're going to have it, right, you can have it anytime.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a big key point of the idea of unconditional permission to eat. It's one of the big parts of intuitive eating that really can get wrapped up in fear, because we think when we have permission, I'll just eat what I want, when I want, whenever I want, which is kind of true, but also kind of not, because at the end of the day, do you want to eat the foods that make you not feel so great all the time? No. And so if that's not what you want, permission just allows you to choose not to have it. So you can have the desire, the taste for the ice cream. But if you know, hey, when I had that ice cream last night, I ended up getting a really bad stomach ache, or I ended up feeling really bloated, or I woke up this morning with a headache and I think it could be related. So I'm going to, even though the taste sounds good, I'm going to choose not to eat it to honor my body, but I have permission to have it. If we're like, it's off limits, or I could only have it on the weekend, or blah, 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 that's restriction. But choosing with permission not to have something is a totally different mindset. And our mind is very powerful. And so that's really the difference there, is eating what you want. If you want to honor your health values, if you want to prioritize your nutritional intake, that's totally fine. But permission is the tone there that we have to be able to set first and foremost. Otherwise, it just becomes rules. And we are human and we are very nuanced and things change. So being able to be flexible within that is really important to listening to our body.
Yes, I love that. And I love that the intimation, which is that you can have it without binging. Like if you can have it or not have it, but if you have it, that doesn't mean you're going to binge on it. And mm-hmm. you let yourself have some ice cream for dessert, and you give yourself permission, it's a lot easier to just have the ice cream, enjoy the ice cream, and save some for, you know, some other time, when, as opposed to, I can't have it, so I'm going to have all of it.
Exactly. That all or nothing mindset. And when we start to break free from diet mentality and begin opening ourselves up to permission, we will go through a honeymoon phase. It is very, very common to go through a honeymoon phase where you are eating the ice cream all the time, every day, maybe multiple times a day, or maybe the whole carton all at once. But the key is continuing to nurture your body back to trust by saying, it's okay. I'm still going to allow myself to have it tomorrow. I can still have it the next day, even if I binged on it. And showing your body it's not going anywhere, so that it doesn't feel now or never. And so I can frequently give this comparison to clients, and they can see how it's really possible when I say, imagine if your binge food is ice cream, imagine you eat it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day. Right? I'm telling you, that's your task to do this week. That's your homework as my client. I don't actually tell them to do this, but say, so imagine how long until you want something else, until you're sick of the ice cream, until you realize it is not making you feel good and it's not allowing you to show up in your life as you want to feel like your best. And they may think, I could never stop. I'm like, no, be realistic. Really think about it. And they see that, maybe after a day or two or three, I'm like, all right, I'm done with this ice cream. When we fully give ourselves permission to eat it, we see that actually eating it all the time isn't what we want to do. And so that honeymoon phase we may go through of eating a lot of it is really just a crucial part of showing ourselves that it's not this exciting novel thing that like needs to be put up on this pedestal. It's really not that great. And we can have it and move on without having to have all these rules and rigidity around it. So the honeymoon phase is common. So if anyone's sitting there thinking, wait, no, when I have permission, I just go crazy. I'm like, yeah, you probably will for a while. But if we allow ourselves to go through that with permission, knowing it's building back trust with our body, then it does eventually end.
It makes me think about this book, this child book called Bread and Jam for Francis. There was a series of Francis books. Francis was a beaver and she lived with her beaver family and got into all kinds of mischief. And Bread and Jam for Francis is she only wants to eat bread and jam. And she's just like, whatever her mom serves, she's like, I want to eat bread and jam. So finally, one day, she gets bread and jam for breakfast, bread and jam for lunch, bread and jam for dinner. And she's like, score, I'm eating bread and jam. It's awesome. And by like, I don't know, 2 days later, she gets bread and jam. Everyone else is eating, you know, brisket. And she gets bread and jam. And she's like, oh, can I have a bite? And bread and jam loses its allure. It's exactly your point that at first it's like, yes. And then it's, I'm sick of bread and jam.
I need to get that book. I've never heard of that before. That's awesome.
it's from like the 30s or the 50s or like it's some old children's series of books. The Francis books. Bread and Jam for Francis is the one you need to look at. Yeah. Again, I want to invite anyone to call in 323-203-0815 if you have any questions for Marissa, or if you are just enjoying our conversation, which it looks like people are, judging from what I'm seeing on Instagram. So, okay, let's switch a little bit to body image.
Sure.
How do you feel good about your body when you hate your body?
I think that is a very loaded question, but a question I get asked a lot. It is a process. And I think that throughout the process of rebuilding trust with your body in relationship to food, it goes hand in hand to also rebuild trust and your peace and relationship with your outer shell here, you know, your body in which carries you through your life. And if we try to do one without the other, you know, we may just be kind of adding fuel to the fire and the cycle can continue. Because if we're like, yeah, but like I trust my body, but only if I look a certain way, then it's just another condition to the permission that fuels the restriction. So I think that loving your body becomes redefined, is loving your body about what it looks like, or is it giving love to your body, showing your body love, treating your body with love and respect? And when we can shift to that perspective, we realize that we would never treat someone we love the way we treat and talk about our own body. And so why is there that double standard? If we don't eventually love what we look like, can we be okay with that? You know, that's not the shiny, you know, happy ending that a lot of people are looking for, but it's also realistic of, is that the most important thing within your values? Is that what you want people to read? This is a little morbid, but read at your funeral? Was that what you wanted to say in your obituary? No, you probably want it to highlight the value you showed up in within this world. And maybe that's kindness, and you were an amazing friend, family, you had this charisma or passion or humor that just lit up the room around you. Or maybe it's about your knowledge, and you were so smart, and your ability to give back, etc. Like, nobody's going to be like, and she was thin. Like, that's the least interesting thing about your life story. And that's one of the key things that shifted my momentum in recovery, was just like, this is not what my life is about. And so as we can start to pull our focus from what our body looks like in this life to how we're showing up in this world aligned with our values, it just doesn't matter as much. It doesn't have as much importance. So it's a big mindset shift. It's also a grief, right? Of grieving the life we envisioned and those expectations we had for ourselves if we showed up in the world in a different body that we thought looked better, especially when the world around us is full of weight stigma and is incredibly hard on diverse body sizes. But it's really you choosing you over top of those norms. And then that is truly love. And then showing your body that love means so much more than a fleeting beauty standard ever would.
Yes, we wouldn't love our friends better if they lost weight. We wouldn't think they were somehow better people if they lost weight. Exactly. Yeah.
And why make our lives harder than it needs to be by holding double standards? We should show our body the same love we show our friends and our family. And truthfully, this is something that likely was rooted in something in childhood. So I even sometimes do a little bit of tapping into that inner child of, would you say this to that inner child who first heard it? And if we can really connect to that, maybe even look at a picture and say, do we feel this way about that child who heard it or internalized it from the world around them? It can be incredibly moving to give our inner child the reparenting that we deserved back then, to feel safe and secure as you are in your own authenticity, to just be okay in the here and now with yourself.
Yeah, healing our relationship to ourself is everything. And just one more thing I wanted to add to your point, which is people have to grieve the hope that if they get to a certain, that they won't get to a certain weight and therefore won't have a certain life. But don't you find that even when people get to that weight, they still have to grieve the life that they thought that reaching the scale would give them, as if the scale is this superpower and that if you just get to this number, then everything in your life changes. You change, people around you change the way they think about you. And that's the diet culture selling us the notion that if we change our weight, we change our lives.
Yeah, exactly. And I've talked to hundreds of people, if not thousands, who have told me it still never felt good enough once they got to their goal weight. And so what if instead of focusing on a number, we focus on behaviors that fill us up, that make us feel good, that align with our values? And behaviors are really all that's within our control. And that can be a lot less fleeting than a number. And also there's no promise in a number. Like you said, it's you get there and it didn't do anything magic, but we look at it with these rose-colored glasses on and have these fantasies that were being sold. And it can be quite disappointing and be a grief to get to that point and realize it's maybe even worse than it thought you thought it could ever be.
Yeah, it's really insidious, the diet culture that says that gives us that message, because so many people have said, oh, I, you know what, when I'm this weight, I'm going to be this confident, outgoing person. No, you're an introspective, shy person. You're not going to become a different person at a different mm-hmm. weight. You're going to be an introspective, shy person at that weight. And mm-hmm. and so part of it is, of course, giving up the hope that mm-hmm. you could be different if you change your weight. But
yeah. And even if we've gone through that cycle and gained weight on the other side, which is very, very common, the weight loss studies out there, there's very limited data on anyone maintaining a weight loss of more than 5% for longer than 2, 3, 4 years. There's barely any studies later longer than 5. So long term, it's very common to gain that weight back. But even if we have, we can look back on our smaller body image days and think it was so different. Oh, well, I was so confident. Everything was perfect. I did have my love life and my happiness and blah, blah, blah. And it is hard for us to look back without those rose-colored glasses and be like, really? You know, all those problems were gone. You weren't struggling with binging or obsessing. And then that's when the clients can go, well, like, yeah, I was still like, you know, counting all my calories. And I would, I guess I would miss dinners with friends because I was worried about the menu. And oh yeah, I guess I also, you know, wasn't putting myself out there because I was worried about what people thought of me and blah. Like, it's not as beautiful looking back as it may seem when we're maybe in a more vulnerable state. And so sometimes even just getting real with ourselves of like, did it give me what it promised it would, can be enough to be like, so why am I trying to do it again if it didn't even give me that life that I was dreaming of? And let's find another way to find that feeling of peace, happiness, confidence, satisfaction, and something that's a little less fleeting.
Yeah. Great point. And it really, as trite as it sounds, that happiness is an inside job. It is how we feel about ourselves, what we think about ourselves, who we are, not what we look like or what we weigh, which also something you touched on is a cultural construct that keeps changing. Like mm-hmm. Marilyn Monroe would be considered plus size, I think, by today's ridiculous standards. Mm-hmm. Right. There was a time when having like a little tiny tush was the way to go. And now people are getting Brazilian butt implants. So mm-hmm. it's so sad.
I know. If you think back even in history to like the Renaissance times, those women and the nude paintings and sculptures, like they have curves and they have diverse body sizes. You don't see them as being a one size fits all figure. And why do we forget when we look back on that body diversity is real and it is normal to not look like some, you know, unrealistic thin ideal. And even in that time and in other cultures in today, having a curvier or more like less straight sized body is seen as wealth or seen as being like royal because you have the ability to eat enough food, etc. And so that's even in the here and now, just a shift in the area that you're living in can shift the way people see your body. So that's where it's like, why continue to rely on those external validators that can change from one region to the next, from one time frame to the next, and instead start to learn how to be okay with you from inside, because that's all you have at the end of the day. It's like a quote that's like, wherever you go, there you are. So it's like, even if you went somewhere that was putting your specific body type up on a pedestal as this ideal, if you internally still aren't happy with yourself, then it really was never about being good enough in the world, but rather being good enough inside.
Exactly. There's a question, but I'm not, Josh, I don't really understand your question. Who are we attracting with our specific body size? I do want to say this. Speaking of Josh, who's a guy, one of the things that I hear a lot from men is they feel a resentful that the culture is telling them they should only like women who look like this. You know, like the culture saying you should like 5'8", 100-pound, you know, people look like Barbie, like that's who you should like. Mm-hmm. And they don't, they like a totally different, you know, curvy, whatever. And almost they feel like there's something wrong with them because they're not living up to the cultural ideal of what they think that they should like. And a lot of women are like, well, men only like this. Well, there are no men, mm-hmm. right? A guy. Yeah. There are no women.
And yeah. And that shows that it's not even just the act of dieting, but diet culture in and of itself is what's fueling those ideals of like, you have to look a certain way to be desirable or to be seen as successful or wealthy or like love, like all of these different things. And so for a guy to feel like there's this standard that they have to pursue out there is just another way of relying on external cues, external rules and norms versus your inner heart, which might be like, I'm just attracted to people who have good character or who make me laugh or who see me for me and that being enough. There's this amazing creator. Her name is Alicia McCarville, and she is a plus size woman in a relationship with a straight size man who is in the fitness industry, kind of is that idea or image of fitness. And they talk a lot about this dynamic and the way that they do get really hateful comments about the diverse body sizes in their relationship, when at the end of the day, he loves her for her. And that it was never about the body. And that needs to be out there more of like, there's no like right or wrong way to partner up with someone. And we should absolutely cultivate more of a culture where we're seeing people for who they are, not what they are.
And maybe he likes her curvy plus size body. Right?
Maybe. And if he didn't, then that's not her problem. Like, right? It's one of those things where it's like we can just honor whatever it is that we like. Like some people like women, some people like men, some people are non-binary. Like there's all sorts of different things. And it's about not placing judgment on another for their own choices and their own love interests.
So what seems like a all about diet or what you should eat, what you shouldn't eat, really is the tip of an iceberg that when you get underneath is about our societal prohibitions against certain things or ideals, and just really challenging that and finding love for ourselves, for who we are and each other, because we don't apply that principle to other people. We're just not like, yeah, I really don't think I can have that person as a friend because they're just too tall or too short or too big or too small. No, it's like, I love that person as a friend. We just need to apply that to ourselves.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And if a friend came to you and had concerns about their body or their relationship or their health or their binge eating, whatever it was, would we approach that with judgment or shame, or would we approach that with empathy and compassion and curiosity, and then maybe even advice once we understood the whole story there? And so we can do that with ourselves.
Exactly. I love this message. I love everything about your philosophy and sensibility, and I am so glad that you were able to join us today. Tell everybody how they can reach you.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. This was really, really fun. And I hope everyone feels like they were able to leave with some motivation or empowerment to shift their relationship with food in their body. I am binge.nutritionist on Instagram. can also find me on a lot of other social media platforms like TikTok. I'm Binge Nutritionist. For the most part, that's where I'm most engaged is Instagram. But I also have a website, which is makainutrition.com, which is M-A-K-A-I nutrition.com. And that's where you can find a lot more about my services. Oh, and I have a podcast, Behind the Binge.
I was going to say, and yes. Yeah.
Well, yes. Well, we'll have to do this in reverse on my podcast. So that way we can hear more about this psychology side, even though so much of even what I do coasts on that line of like counseling and our you know, psychology, because food is not just nutrition principles. It is very complex. And yeah. And so totally we should do that sometime.
Absolutely. I accept.
Yeah.
That wonderful, delightful. And you guys go look up Marissa. She is all over social media, but she's got so much great content on Instagram. And I know you have something that you're going to offer very soon, right? You have, want to say
yes,
anything?
Yes,
it?
I do. I muted myself for a second because they're hammering next door in the construction. Yes, I have a live training actually tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern, and it's all about intuitive eating and how we can pair our instinct with our logic as an intuitive eater. So it's going to be diving into some of those difficulties in navigating making decisions with our logic and rationality when our body may be telling us something different with the physical cues.
Sounds amazing. Check it out, everyone. Have a wonderful week. That is our show for today. I am here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. on the podcast. Watch later. Now I can say watch because we're actually on video. You can watch later on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you get podcasts. Have a wonderful day. Stay curious. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.